Hey, you know, I'm about to bring up something that probably it's occurred to me many times. I don't know about you, you know, but I had an experience once, and this story that I'm about to tell you is a moderately eerie story. Have you ever ridden around the country any place outside of Jersey, anywhere, West Virginia, Connecticut, any place, and you see all those street signs, actually road signs, not street signs, but road signs with bullet holes in them? You mean to tell me you have not seen signs that got bullet holes in them? Well, where do you spend your time? And you've never seen? Well, then you don't look at road signs. I think you're just one of them guys that just, when it says slow, you just don't even pay no attention, right? You know, oh, I can't believe you haven't seen road signs on highway signs. I don't mean street signs that said 14th and Vine. I'm talking about road signs way the heck up, and you just go by so fast you don't know, huh? Or you just gotta look around sometime. Well, have you ever seen those signs that people write on rocks and stuff? All right, let me tell you what happened to me one night. I am riding along. It's all dark, man, I'll tell you. I love to drive along late at night by myself. I don't know why this is so, but it's something that I just tune into it. I'm not one of those people who need a lot of people around them. You know, I always hear this song that... was it Frank Lester? I don't recall who wrote it. Barbara Streisand type thing. You know, people. This is the reverse of me. I don't need them. I mean, most of the time, I could keep my own counsel. You ever had that feeling? You know, I love it. And I'm a lone type. And I love to drive along about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, way out someplace like, on the main highway leading outside of Beckley, West Virginia, heading to some esoteric place like Omaha or Odessa, Texas, or something like that. Late night, long distance driving is my thing. Now, this is something that many people avoid. You know, instantly they're in the first Howard Johnson motel they can come to as soon as it starts getting a little bit dark out. I'm quite the reverse. I tend to, if I have to rest on a trip, I tend to want to do it in the daytime. So, you know, late at night, and you see some great stuff late at night if you keep your eyes open and you know what you're looking for. And one night I was driving through West Virginia, and it was a kind of a cold, damp night, and yet it was... fairly visible. The visibility was kind of luminous in the sense that it was a gray night, but there was a heavy moon apparently above the clouds, and it was kind of light, and yet at the same time it was misty. You know, the kind of night. I'm driving along through the mountains there, and not a single car anywhere. There was nothing. There wasn't a light behind me and a light ahead of me. That's an eerie time. I'm driving along and I'm listening to some radio station down in Dreamsville, Texas, or something, you know. And this guy's on, and he's got this heavy accent, and his signal was coming through heavily overmodulated. They had this everything pouring this. They were just pouring every watt they could in the air. And it was one of these stations, you know, that had nothing but. What they call PIs in the business. You know what PIs are? A PI is a percentage of inquiry, meaning that the station doesn't sell time, it sells goods, which means that they get a percentage of every piece of goods sold. So this guy's out, he says, and I want to tell you, I turn up the gain, I could hear the crashing of static somewhere. There was a big storm, it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, he says, and I want to tell you, for all you folks out there that have wondered when you're going to get wonderful, good, beautiful, clean, and magically colored quilt cloths for making that new quilt. $3.95 a bag. You don't have to send no money. Just send your name and address to Quip in care of Odessa, Texas. Quip. That's spelled Q-W-I-L-T. Quip in care of Odessa, Texas. You send your name and address, and you will be billed. And then 10 days later, if you do not find total and complete satisfaction with a Quilt Lady's wonderful quilt patches, we will be glad to refund your money with no questions within 10 days. So you can't lose with this offer. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to point out, too, that if you are among the first 25 to tonight, I'm sitting there listening, seeing I'm driving along, 2 to 3 o'clock, going, man, this is the sound of our country. And on the wind is blowing over the mountains there, and the rain keeps coming and going. And yet it's a kind of a luminous. I can see this road stretching ahead of me. Well, I go around one of the hills. I'm digging down deep. We're going down towards this small town outside of Beckley. You know where Beckley is, don't you? Outside of this town, heavily, big woods all around me. And my headlights are splashing on either side of the road. I have the brights on. Well, all of a sudden, I see this guy pull out ahead of me. This guy in an old car just pulls out right ahead of me, and he starts taking off down the road straight ahead. And the two of us, you don't pass on a lot of those mountain roads. You just don't, you know. And we're going like in tandem. He's going pretty good, too. So he's up ahead about a half a mile ahead, and I could see his taillight once in a while go around a mountain, come back out, and for a while, then he disappears. He hits another curve. So we finally hit it straight. We're whistling along on a straight there, maybe about, I'd say we're going maybe 70, 75 miles an hour, the both of us seen. This guy's up ahead there. When all of a sudden I see this guy pull off to the side. He's way up. He's about a mile and a half ahead of me. He pulls off. I see the car just swerve off to the left. And I come right on, you know. I come right on up there, and I slowed up because I didn't know what there was, maybe a problem or two, you know. I didn't know. So I slowed up a little bit, and I was watching, and I can't believe the scene. This guy has jumped out of his car, and I see him. There's a big rock, great big rock piled up there. It's one of these kind of fields that's full of rocks, a little cliff there, you know, big rock. And he's jumped out, and he's got a bucket of paint. And he is writing on this big rock, "Jesus saves." He puts it right out there, "Jesus saves." And I see this in the headlights. And he's running back, and he jumps in the car. And I, just at that moment, I go, zoom. I go whistling past it, see. And I see him pull out the road, and now he's behind me. Well, we go about another mile and a half like that, the two of us going 10, and he's going hell-bent for election, see. So I just want to watch this guy. So I slow up, and sure enough, he goes past me, you know. He's got this old car banging away there, and he goes roaring by. It's a car that's completely covered with dust, you know, the kind that spends a lot of time on gravel roads, you know, the kind you can't even read what state the license plate is from. It just looks like it's a state that the license plate's made out of clay, you know. Got this little dim red light over it. And he just goes roaring by. Well, as he goes roaring by, and he takes a look out of that side window at me, and I could see his face in the dark. He had this big sort of look like a straw hat. And he just goes roaring by. Well, I see him going up ahead there. See, I'm slowing up. I'm going down about 60, 65 now, and he's going along about 70, 75. He's slowly pulling away. Sure enough, about a mile and a half, 2 miles up the road from me, he pulls off again. And I just slowed up. Now, I wanted to see him this time. See, I slowed up, and I pull along. I'm just putting along maybe 50, 55. And then I see him. "Jesus saves!" He's right just on the side of somebody's barn in the dark. "Jesus saves!" He jumps in the car. And the two of us rode down there. And goes, "Give me a little of that Conker's music, man. This is a man with a mission." And I said to myself, I said, "My God, some guy's got a mission tonight." It's the first time I ever saw anybody write one of those things. If Jesus saves, he just laid it out on a rock. And I had this kind of time, you know, when I think about that, I had this vision of this guy. Night after night, right now, tonight, he's hurtling through the rain out there, that dark rain and wind blowing over those hills, and he's got that can of whitewash. He's got that big Sears Roebuck brush. He's got that burning eye. He's
He's got that clay-covered car. He's jumping up. He's writing, Jesus save. And then he roars out again. Yes, there are one that brings the driven.
Being trailed by another car. Obviously, they don't know it. that is out obviously working for the other candidate, and they are pulling down the posters. As this guy's putting them up, they are pulling them down. Now I'm watching this scene, saying, "My God, this is fantastic!" You know, there's going to be a moment when those two cars are going to meet, and you know, with the guy with the staple gun is going to come across the guy with the tack hammer to pull them out, you know. And, you know, it's the irresistible force. Well, as I walk along there, I thought to myself, you know, all over the world, there are people who put up posters and write signs. I have never once in my life ever written anything on the side of a wall. Have you ever done it? Well, now, you don't mind if I get personal about this. What precisely did you write? I mean, after all, we do have a mixed audience here. What precisely did, was yours non-denominational, just a small message for the world you left? I see. Well, was it a positive message, like be brave, or was it a put-down message? I'm just curious what you wrote. I wonder. You know, I'm always intrigued by you know, who it is who does this stuff. You know, who is the guy that actually, it's a good point, you know, and you never see them doing this stuff, really. And it has to happen in a finite period in time, but who actually does it? But the night that I saw this guy write Jesus Saves, I knew I was seeing a historical moment, because those things last forever, and I'm sure that 1,000 years from now, they're going to come across that rock, you know. And, of course, there's going to be another footnote in a study of man's ancient religions. That'll be the religion of our time, or at least, you know, one of the religions of our time. And, I just wonder whether or not, if you look carefully at the bottom of temples in ancient Greece, you know, where the temples are all sitting around there outside of Athens, if you get the proper kind of ultraviolet ray kind of camera, if you can see ancient scrawled things like Apollo Lives, or Hooray for Mercury, or Thor Loves You, or Watch Out for Minerva. You know, the guys of those days must have sat around and worried that they crossed Neptune, and Neptune's going to come at it with that trident, you know, the big pickle fork, and it's going to lay a goodie on them, you know. You've seen Neptune. By the way, speaking of Neptune, if I may, I always, from the time I was a kid, I was always fascinated by those gods. Yeah, you know, Apollo, great, great god. Mercury. Now, who is Mercury? Quick. You know, cars used to be named after gods. Has it occurred to you that Mercury is named after a god? And what was he known for? Right. Winged Mercury. He was fast. Can you name other cars that were named after gods? Come on. All right, can you name any of those other gods in that pantheon, in that crowd? Yes, Apollo, of course. Who else? Well, who is the head one in that crowd? You know, one of the funniest novels I ever read in my life, and I have to admit this to you, I mean, because guys keep writing me and saying, what influenced you, Shepard, as a writer? When you were a kid, they always wanted to think, you know, you must have sat around and read Mark Twain. I never did as a kid. I never read Mark Twain as a kid. For some reason or other, Mark Twain bored me as a kid. Yep, you have to admit it, it did. It was only later on that I'm still not a Tom Sawyer fan. I must say that Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi I dig, but a lot of others just left me cold. Now, what else, what did affect me? Well, at the age of about 9, there was this kid across the street named Lawrence Stryker who got deeply involved in reading us, and he was like the social and
one kid that's the kind of cultural leader and everybody sort of does the thing he's doing. Just about the time he stops doing it, that's when you start picking up on it. See, he's always a leader. Well, this kid got leading the series of books, and all of us had to read them, and I really got turned on by him. And one of the books, one of the novels, was about, it opened up with a scene of Neptune sitting in the bottom of a Miami Beach swimming pool. And he was poking ladies with his trident. What novel was this? All the gods had come to life. You see what they did? They came back to Earth is what happened. They came back to Earth, you see. And for a specific reason. And there's a whole crowd where Mercury was sitting around, Apollo, Diana. Diana, quick, what's Diana the goddess of? Come on, the hunt. What's the matter with you guys? Diana of the hunt. And they were all sitting around doing this stuff, and I'm reading this, and I'm flipping, man. And ever since that time, I've had a soft spot in my head for that great crowd of gods. You know, I have a sneaking suspicion they're going to come back. Oh, wait a minute, don't put it down. Who would have thought if 10 years ago you had said, you know, I know it's going to come back. I'll tell you what's going to come back. Exorcism is going to come back, and the devil and all that. So, yeah, you said, come on, you're out of here, Barry. The devil. You know, nobody believes in the devil. Right? Why? Come on, are you kidding? Most guys are running around today figuring everything they do is caused by the devil. Has it occurred to you that the devil created Watergate? I mean, I think that would be one hell of a fantastic defense for Ehrlichman to say that it was the devil. The devil was running the whole thing. You know, that's possibly true. I mean, we reject it out of hand, but there was some evil force at work. Who knows, you know? And I suspect that within 10 years, there will be a cult developed that will sit around and talk about Dionysius, and they're going to sit there and worship Diana and Minerva. Now, how about Athena? That's right. That's a nice, that's a great name, you know. Athena, Diana, Minerva. You like Mercury. Oh, Mercury, you like that little hat he wears? You see, he wears this funny little hat. Now, you got to understand that the gods of that type, and this is what makes them so, so really, people can dig them, is that they have very definite human weaknesses. These gods, well, they'd swing, they drink heavily, they do stupid things, sure. And they had very human angers. One of them get bugged and come down and just lay waste the whole countryside, you know, hurling thunderbolts around just because he got bugged. This is very human. And it's kind of an attractive series of things to think about, to believe. And as a kid, I got into this. And I don't know whether or not most kids go through a period where they get involved in mythology. Did you ever go through that as a kid, reading mythology at all? Well, what did you read as a kid? Allied catalogs? No? What was it? I think it would make a fantastic TV series. Nightlife of the Gods. And that was, by the way, the name of the novel that I'm discussing. It was called Nightlife of the Gods. And I will award Brass Figsby with Bronze Oak Leaf Palm if you can tell me the name of the author of that. He also wrote a novel from which a very early famous TV series was made. He's been long since dead, but his stuff lends itself curiously to television. And this series occasionally shows up on, you know, channels that are way down at the end of the line that haven't got color yet. You know, and they play nothing but old black and white movies and old reruns of TV or wrestling and that kind of stuff. Occasionally you will see his this series show up. This same guy wrote this series. That is, And he... Huh? Correct. Very good. Absolutely. Topper. Correct. Now, who wrote that? He also wrote a novel where a guy was magically suddenly turned into a woman. And that also was made first into a movie, and then later it became a TV series for a short time. The movie version was played by an actress who you may or may not recall, Carol Landis. You recall the name Carol Landis? And the man who was the man in this thing was a guy named John Hubbard. Did you ever hear of that actor? Yeah. But what was the name of that novel? And who was the guy? I'll tell you another clue. He was a professor. This guy wrote these novels in his spare time. They were curiously ribald novels. They could not be called obscene. They only could be called ribald. One of his novels was about a guy that was changed into a horse. And the opening scene was him walking down the street, and he's very embarrassed. He meets these two people that he knows, and here he is, he's a horse, and he's got no clothes on or anything. He's a horse, and he keeps apologizing. He's, look, I can't, very embarrassed about showing up like this, but, who was this novelist? He also wrote another fine novel where the guy... Again, he was interested in viewing things from two different angles. But the guy was, you heard me tell a story about the guy that was turned into a goldfish, right? You know about that one. He also wrote that novel. You don't know who he is. Very few people know of him, but he affected a lot of other writers because he combined fantasy with a kind of sardonic ribaldry. And at the same time, wild. You couldn't put his work in any given category. He wasn't no way fantasy fiction, but yet, what can you classify a novel where the main characters are all the gods, like Neptune and Mercury and Diana, and you know that crowd? What is it? It is fantasy, obviously, but at the same time, was it just really unbelievably rippled and sort of curiously debauched? Now, this guy was a professor, and he was also a legendary drinker. Who was it? Who created Topper? Who played Topper? In the TV, who? Right. And you remember the dog that walked around in Topper? Right. Some of his books, one of them called The Nightlife of the Gods, Topper, was Topper. The Stray Lamb was one of his best novels. And I suspect some hit publisher is going to wind up and bring these back out in paperback because they're really curious reading. They combine a Jovian concept. In fact, you would have to say his literature was almost a kind of hardcover graffiti. Would you please? I mean, you kind of like these literary shows from time to time. Oh, yes, right now, this very minute, at this hour of the night. I'll guarantee you, some guy is jumping out of a 53 Dodge